The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'm Sam Livingston, and I will be your guest host for today's show. Mr. Stephen Fleury will be back on Monday. If you have any comments or feedback for the show, you can email td@thetrumpet.com. You can watch old episodes. You can watch the live video stream each day at 11 a.m. by visiting thetrumpet.com/live. If you want to listen to the show, you can listen on CRN3 Digital Radio. You can also listen on our website. On today's show, I'd like to talk about radical left-wing prosecutors taking over many cities and districts throughout the United States. We'll talk a little bit about vaccination passports. We'll talk about immigration and the latest infrastructure bill that is supposedly a bipartisan work, the 2,700-page infrastructure bill that has nothing to do with infrastructure. All that coming up on today's show. We'll go ahead and jump right into the first segment here, talking about the radical prosecutors in the United States. This is a story that I think really doesn't get a lot of attention. You hear more about the effects of it. You hear about rising crime in San Francisco. You hear about it in places like New York City and Oakland. And a lot of that isn't because the police aren't doing their jobs. It's because the prosecutors are declining to convict or charge these criminals that have been arrested and caught. I'd like to start this segment by reading a quote from Mr. Gerald Fleury. This is from the Philadelphia Trumpet, November-December 2018. He writes, Americans need to wake up. He's writing this after the Brett Kavanaugh attack, the smear campaign back in 2018. He says, Americans need to wake up. Satan is at work, dividing the country, turning us against each other, hollowing away the strength of our republic. Bible prophecy shows this is leading to nation-destroying violence. It seems the radical left has virtually taken over the entire Democratic Party today, with few exceptions. And they are pushing for conflict. They are cheering the groundswell of discontent and resistance. Even the mainstream press will not denounce such gross behavior. They eagerly publicize it. They won't call a rowdy, angry mob what it is. They consider it lawful, democratic protests. Politicians are encouraging provocative, divisive conduct. They view it as justifiable cries for justice and proof of the president's, this is President Trump, unpopularity and illegitimacy. They are playing to these mobs and stirring them up. And that's kind of sets the theme for today's show. The radical left dividing the country, turning us against each other, hollowing away the strength of our republic. And you see this theme run throughout all of the news today, whether it's the vaccine mandates, these prosecutors, immigration laws, they are dividing America, and their goal is to destroy. And what's behind that? Like Mr. Fleury says, ultimately it all gets back to Satan the devil. And Bible prophecy explains exactly where this is leading, as we'll explain on today's show. So these state and federal prosecutors, like I said, maybe they don't get a lot of attention, but they're a very important and crucial part of the way justice is administered in the United States. And the radicals know that. You hear, obviously, the big names at the very top. You know who the attorney general is. You know who the president is. But then you work your way down the system, and maybe you don't know who the district attorney is of San Francisco or of Boston. But at the end of the day, those are the people that are going to decide, do we charge criminals? They're the ones who can decide who to prosecute. It's very important, actually, to know who those individuals are, because that is when the arms of the justice system are going to start to touch your life in a more personal way. President, I almost said President Biden, fake President Joe Biden has nominated a woman named Rachel Rollins to serve as the U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts. She is right up there with some of the other crazies that he has nominated in, well, cabinet positions. This is just a district attorney for Massachusetts. This is what the Washington Free Beacon writes about Rollins, and you can see her on the screen there. There, Rollins' potential promotion represents a significant return on investment for the Democratic mega-donor George Soros, who has invested millions of dollars in reshaping prosecutors' office around the country with liberal activists like Rollins. He goes on to talk about how this prosecutor, Rollins, she's working with other radical left-wing prosecutors to create these alliance or these groups between them. It says here, last year, Rollins partnered with two other Soros-backed district attorneys to form the Truth, Justice, and Reconciliation Commission. This is modeled after South African tribunals established to reckon with apartheid. The commission called the U.S. system, the U.S. justice system, a cruel and oppressive force of injustice for minorities. So these are the individuals that are supposed to be enforcing the law. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the legislative branches pass, what they say is a law. It requires the executives to enforce the law. And these individuals will not enforce the law. In fact, they go and they target their political opponents, as we'll talk about in a few minutes here. The Beacon writes that Rollins backs a moratorium on the prosecution of 15 crimes, including drug distribution, shoplifting, resisting arrest, disorderly conduct, breaking and entering, and making threats. There's a list of 15 things that she has publicly announced she will not charge criminals for. So the police can go out and arrest these people because it's still a law on the books. The people, through the legislative body, decided that these should be laws and they should be enforced. And this prosecutor, rather than keeping it quiet, rather than just ignoring it and saying, okay, well, we're not going to prosecute it, announces to the world she will not charge criminals that are brought in on these charges. So the police can arrest them all they want, but the prosecutors will not charge them. It'll be interesting to see if she's confirmed. Obviously, if you're a prosecutor and you're not prosecuting crimes, that leaves you with a lot of extra time on your hands, as you'll see that they're targeting their political opponents. They're going after their political opponents for these petty crimes. Another district attorney that you may have heard of is named Chesa Boudin. He's the San Francisco district attorney. And if you're curious about all of the crime in San Francisco, it probably has to do with this guy. I mean, there's always been crime in the big cities, but you've seen the videos over the last 2 years about how much worse it has gotten. He became the district attorney in January of 2020. Here's a little bit about this man's mother. His mother's name is Kathy Boudin. She comes from a rich history of Marxist supporters. Kathy was a member of the Weather Underground. That's a left-wing terrorist organization from the 70s and 80s. They were responsible for several terrorist attacks on the United States. In 1981, Kathy, this is his mom, was convicted for her role in a robbery against an armored truck in New York, and they killed two police officers. She was sentenced to 20 years in prison. The year before that crime was when Chesa was born, so she is spending her life in prison, and she needs someone to raise her new child. And guess who raises this boy? Well, members of the Weather Underground, Bill Ayers and a woman named Bernadice Dorn. And if you've read our literature, if you've watched this show, you're familiar with the name Bill Ayers. He led this terrorist group. He was close friends with Barack Obama in the 80s. So these radical leftists are raising this boy. The Weather Underground, they were responsible for the attacks like the Capitol bombing in 1983. They organized someone to go in, stand in front of the Senate chamber. They left a backpack, I think it was, in the bathroom, and it was just on a timer. They didn't know if people would be around or not, and it went off. It caused massive amounts of destruction right outside the Senate chamber. Thankfully, they were very bad with their timing, and it went off in the middle of the night. But you want to talk about an insurrection. You want to talk about terrorists. Look no further. So that's the group that this man's mom belonged to. That's the group that his foster parents belonged to and operated. There's a lot more detail we could go into about all of the connections here. There's a woman named Susan Rosenberg who was also part of this group. She was implicated in these bombings. She had a 60-year sentence that was cut short by Bill Clinton and Gerald Nadler. He petitioned Bill Clinton to let her out of jail early. Kathy Boudin, she went on to be a professor at Columbia. This other girl that I mentioned that Bill Clinton let out of jail, she went on to be a professor at Hamilton College in New York. So the radicals are becoming the professors. The radicals are raising the prosecutors. And you see this tactic, rather than trying to attack from without, rather than using explosives to try to bring down the government, just like a good communist would, they decided, well, we need to infiltrate from within. We need to destroy from within the system. So they get their people in positions of power, and you see the fruits. Look at San Francisco. Probably look at Boston in a few months if she gets confirmed, if this Rollins lady gets confirmed. Another one of these radicals is named Larry Krasner. Krasner is the district attorney of Philadelphia. He happened to be elected in Philadelphia in a vote that saw 50% higher turnout than in any other election in Philadelphia in recent history. So you don't often hear about an election for a district attorney. It's not a high-profile event. So it's pretty unusual to hear that there's 50% higher turnout. And we know, just like we saw in 2020, these big cities are notorious for election scandals. I haven't looked into the details of what happened with his election, but I'm sure there's something nefarious at play here. He's been the district attorney in Philadelphia since 2017. And his election was pretty surprising to a lot of people because prior to running to be the district attorney, he was a lawyer representing the Black Lives Matter group. So he spent his time prosecuting police officers, and now he has been elected to essentially be the boss of all of the city's police officers. This is from the Philadelphia Inquirer. This is from May 2017. The article is titled, "This Wasn't Just a Primary Victory, This Was a Revolution." This is a left-wing paper. They write, "In pulling off what once would have been a shocking upset but seemed inevitable in the waning hours of the campaign, Krasner was surely helped by a huge infusion of outside cash, at least $1.45 million from the liberal billionaire investor George Soros. But those Soros-backed ads carried a message that would have been unthinkable during Abraham's reign," I think that's the previous DA, "bragging of his work to free demonstrators from Black Lives Matter and his civil lawsuits against the police." So that's what he ran on, that he defends BLM, that he prosecutes police officers. So what do you think if you're a police officer in Philadelphia and you arrest a violent criminal? Does the DA have your back? Does your boss have your back? No, they find these criminals back out on the streets just weeks after they arrest them. It happens all the time in these big cities. It happens all the time in Chicago. The police are out there trying to enforce the law. They arrest the violent criminals, and then they arrest them again a month later because the prosecutors don't do their jobs. Another prosecutor, you've probably heard about her in recent months. Her name is Kimberly Gardner. She's the circuit attorney for St. Louis. She's been in that position since 2017. Now, you won't see a lot of mainstream outlets write about what these prosecutors are doing. You have to go to the local news. And a lot of these local news stations, a lot of the locals in these areas are pretty upset because what these prosecutors are doing is essentially turning these cities into third world countries. Look at San Francisco. Look at St. Louis since the death of Michael Brown. This AG, she is notorious for not prosecuting criminals. This is from KSDK Local News in St. Louis. They write, in all, police said they sought 7,045 felony charges in 2019. So they went out, they arrested the lawbreakers. These are felons. So they did their job. They arrest them. They put them in jail. Now it's up to the attorneys, the state prosecutors, to decide, are we going to charge these people? KSDK News writes, prosecutors pursued initial disposition charges or charges in for the first time police apply for charges on cases. That's a lot of detail that you don't need to know. Prosecutors pursued charges for 1,641 of them. So 25% of these felons were actually charged. And the police here are upset. They're risking their lives. They're doing their jobs. They're trying to protect the community. And 75% of the criminals that they arrested on felony charges were not charged because of this DA, because of this prosecutor. And another aspect of what these prosecutors do, especially this one, they get into this position, they're elected, and they clean out all of the previous lawyers that were there. I think in her office, the St. Louis Circuit Attorney's Office, she fired something like 60 lawyers that worked there, and they put in their own lawyers. So effectively, they have their own little micro deep state. So if you take out the prosecutor, they've still got 55, 60 lawyers there running the office for them. So even if you take away the head, they've got all of their minions below them to carry out their task, unless you come in and you clean out the rest of them. I could go into a lot of detail on the crimes that she's declined to prosecute. I'll just leave it at the police are very upset. A lot of these crimes are very clear-cut. They're caught on camera, and they just say something like, well, it could have been worse, or at least they didn't fire the gun, so it's okay. We'll let them go. And what's George Soros doing, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to get people like this put into positions of power? He spent $1.5 million on that attorney in Philadelphia. He spent $200,000 on Kimberly Gardner. You can't compete with these campaigns if you're just a local and you're not backed by some billionaire, because ordinarily the billionaires are not paying attention to who's going to be the DA of St. Louis, Missouri. So there is a plan here. There is a tactic being carried out here, and George Soros is dumping millions into doing it. So you can't compete if you're some other lawyer in St. Louis. You can't compete with the campaign that's backed by this billionaire. There is a strategy here, and at least Gardner, she's in a red state, and that red state of Missouri is pretty upset with what she's doing. And she doesn't have the cleanest track record either. So she's currently under investigation. She could be removed. But she's got all of her lawyers down there below her. She's got those 55, 60 lawyers down there. So what are they doing here? They're destabilizing the country. The criminals are running free. This is an attack on America. It is an infiltration. There's probably a financial interest, too, if you're George Soros. He makes all of his money on, I think he made his first billion on shorting the British pound. He wants to create instability. He profits off of it. There's always that financial interest. But ultimately, this is Satan undermining America and Britain. This is Satan trying to divide and destroy the United States. Remember what Mr. Fleury said. It seems the radical left has virtually taken over the entire Democratic Party, and they are pushing for conflict. They are cheering the groundswell of disconnect and resistance. Sow division, destabilize the country. This is, you're watching the communist plot come to fruition. This is what they've been planning for decades. And right along that, you get into these vaccine passports. And you want to talk about communism, living in a police state, living in what did DeSantis call it? He called it the biomedical security state. Richard Palmer over in the UK, he said that Britain is now talking about not allowing any international travel unless you are vaccinated. You can't leave the country. You can't come into the country without a vaccine. Brent Noctegal, he's in Israel. He said he and his family were walking to an open air food festival. This was outdoors along a street, and the whole festival is gated off, and to get through, you have to go through guards, and you have to show your vaccine passport. There are some beaches in Israel, he said, that they are gating off. You can't even go to the beach if you don't have a passport. And at the same time that is happening, Israel is talking about going into another lockdown. This is the most vaccinated country in the world. So they're talking about going into another lockdown. And wouldn't that mean the vaccine isn't working? But they're still forcing everyone to get vaccinated. At this point, this is not about stopping the disease. This is about punishing the people who are not complying. Coronavirus is not spread when you're outside at the beach. They are punishing people for not getting the vaccine. It's happening in countries you never thought you'd see it happen in. And now it's happening in the United States. The latest Trumpet magazine, The Tyranny of Science. Read the article there, that lead article, The Tyranny of Science. Like DeSantis said of Florida, Governor DeSantis, he wants to avoid a biomedical security state. This was a blog from Substack. This is from a lawyer that we quote very often. His article is titled, "The Unvaccinated, the New COVID Scapegoat." So you have all of these problems. There's breakthrough cases with the vaccine. Hospitalizations are going back up. They're talking about a booster shot, the third jab, and it's not working. They're not able to stop it. Well, whose fault is that? They could say, well, maybe the vaccine isn't as effective as we said it would be. That's one place to start. Instead, they blame the unvaccinated. And now all of a sudden you see Fauci all over the news again. He loves coming back to CNN and MSNBC to sow division, to turn people against one another. He was gone for a long time, maybe a month, when all of those reports started coming out about how he funded the lab in Wuhan, about how he lied about face masks. He had to go in hiding until the media could change the narrative, and then he comes right back out to blame the unvaccinated. Obama's former assistant secretary for Homeland Security, her name is Juliette Kayyem. She wrote an article for The Atlantic, and this article originally came out with the title, "Unvaccinated People Belong on the No-Fly List." That is a list for terrorists. And she admits in this article that there are few, if any, examples of COVID actually being spread on airplanes because they circulate the air so often. What is this about? It's about punishing people who do not comply. That is what happens in communist countries. And would you ever think that Americans would talk like this, would say this about other people? If you want to get vaccinated, fine, let it be your choice. That's always been what we do in the United States. You're free to choose what you want to do. And now these people are talking just like radical communists, Americans. This blogger at Substack, he collects a bunch of posts from these other journalists and writers. This is from Ezra Klein. He works at Vox. He says, "Policymakers need to start raising the costs of remaining unvaccinated. Keep punishing them. Coercion didn't work. Convincing them didn't work. Fauci didn't convince them. The experts couldn't convince them. Start punishing them." This is another writer at Vox. His name is Matthew Iglesias. This is what, in his world, would be how we get everyone vaccinated. He tweeted, "No penalty. Absent politics, my policy would be you either get jabbed voluntarily within X amount of weeks and get a $50 reward, or else you get jabbed later while someone holds you down and you get $0. He is a prominent journalist advocating that medical officials wrestle people to the ground to inject them with an experimental drug. That is not a conspiracy theory. That is what this is called on the FDA website. Until it is approved, it is an experimental drug. Would you ever think that Americans would talk like this? This blogger goes on to talk about how Dr. Fauci, he's happy to get back out there. He's happy to start making the rounds again to lay blame on the unvaccinated for the rising cases. Never mind what's happening in Britain and Israel. Never mind that Israel is talking about a third lockdown. To them, this is clear-cut science. How do you explain the differences between Australia, Israel, and Britain? You can't. There's no humility with these experts to say, hey, we just don't know. And you know, if they said that, I bet a lot more people would listen to them if there was some contrition. If there was some humility to say, we're trying our best, we were wrong about lockdowns, now they hold that against you. If you don't get the vaccine, we're going back into lockdown. Lockdown is not a cure. Lockdown is a punishment, and that is the way they're talking about it now. And in Britain and in Israel, it's turning into a punishment. They're turning into police states. In Australia, it is a police state. We played this clip a few days ago. I wanted to play it again for you because remember, Don Lemon is an American. Go ahead and play clip one.
You can't go to the supermarket. Don't have the vaccine, you don't show it. Can't go to the ball game. Don't have the vaccine, can't go to work. You don't have the vaccine, can't come here. No shirt, no shoes, no service. That's where I think we should be right now.
You can't go to the supermarket. You can't watch sports. You can't go to work? That's a police state. And a lot of these people are not thinking. Just think 2 years into the future. Is that the sort of country you want to live in? Where you have to carry around your papers? It's happening in New York City. They want it. We'll talk about New York City in just a little bit. The New York Times writes, "Can the unvaccinated be persuaded?" This is from Ezra Klein again. He says, "We haven't done enough to suppress the virus when we still could, so we have had to impose far more draconian lockdowns and grieve far more death once we have lost control." Again, back to lockdowns. Nobody wonders, well, why didn't it work the first 5 times we did it? Why do we have to keep doing it? It doesn't work. It's punishment. In Russia, they send you to the gulags in Siberia. In America, they just turn it into a police state. They lock you in your home. Let's remember maybe just what the Declaration of Independence says. This is what Americans rally around, right? We're all Americans. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Now, if Don Lemon had his way and the communists had their way, you couldn't go to the grocery store to buy food unless you're vaccinated. What about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? I need food to live. That is a right. But in their police state, you cannot get food. Or you have to have Jeff Bezos deliver it to you. And who knows how long you'll be able to still do that the way they monitor your online content. People are getting blocked all the time from being able to sell or buy things online. Pursuit of happiness? You need a job to pursue your goals. You need a job to pursue that happiness. Well, not in America. Not if you're unvaccinated. Those rights don't apply to you anymore. Those are privileges that we grant to you. And there's all these legal arguments about how to go about doing this, what's a fundamental right, what isn't. But just think, 2 to 3 years, you want to be living in that sort of world? And that, I mean, this, we're talking about doing this for the flu. And soon, once they see that they can get away with it, they'll do it for climate change. And once they get there, no one knows what the science is there. They can change that on a dime any day they want. John Fund at The Spectator, he writes, New York's vaccine passport scheme could have a nasty side effect in New York City. He writes, this is a councilman in New York City. He says, Councilman Joe Borelli points out that Mayor de Blasio is announcing that 69% of blacks, 58% of Latinos, and the majority of Bronx residents are ineligible to eat in a restaurant or go to a gym. It's like the mayor of Boston said, this is the new Jim Crow. If the majority of people that are unvaccinated, or in these cities at least, are minorities, you're going to ask the minorities to show ID to eat, to go into a restaurant? They don't need it to vote. No one needs it to vote. You need it if you want to do a workout, to be healthy, to boost your immune system so you can fight COVID. Got to show those vaccine papers. It's backfiring on them. Kristen Tate at The Hill, she writes, coming soon, America's own social credit system. Isn't that great? All these big tech companies working with law firms to monitor what people do on their websites and to say, well, is that person, should they be allowed to do this? Well, they tweeted that they think the election is stolen, so no. They can't buy from our website anymore. They can't enter this establishment. It's corporate communism. This is the loophole. And it's the government. You think, how come they're waiting so long to impose rules on Facebook and Twitter or things like PayPal? I guess there's regulation for PayPal. They work with these companies. It's the loophole. It's like the fourth branch of government for them. They don't have to mandate it from the government's point of view. They can just ask Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey, censor these people, or we will create this legislation and these regulations that will shut your company down. So do what we say. They're working with these big companies. I was going to comment a little bit about some columnists writing about how more companies need to treat people the way the NFL is treating its players. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Pittsburgh Steelers, if you're unvaccinated, you have to start wearing a wristband in when you're on the training facilities, anywhere on the ground. And a couple commentators were saying this is a pretty ludicrous and really a mean policy to do, because everyone on the team already knows, because if you're not vaccinated, you have to do things like, well, you can't use certain facilities or you can't go here, yada, yada, yada. What is happening now is these teams are starting their training camps and the press is being allowed into these facilities. So rather than being able to remain anonymous by making a private medical decision, you have to wear a wristband. So as soon as the press come in, they know exactly who the five or six players are that are not vaccinated. Surprisingly, the NFL Players Association, they're against this. The president of that association says no other sports league uses any sort of scarlet marking or helmet decal or wristband because they know it's not necessary and the teams know who's vaccinated, who's not vaccinated. They're just setting them up for the press. It's bullying. It's punishment for not getting the vaccine. And let's get back to talking about Biden. And now he's saying, or there are rumors that they're going to mandate that all international travelers coming into the United States, you can only come in if you are vaccinated. Okay, if that's the case, fine. Let's start with the southern border. Let's start with the 210,000 illegal migrants that crossed the southern border in the month of July. Don't let them in unless they're vaccinated. Jen Psaki tried to answer that. She couldn't explain it. She's just tripping over herself. She said something in that clip when the reporters asked. She said, I know we sound inconsistent, because it is inconsistent. And then she just rambles on, tries to get on to the next question. If you're going to make all of the law-abiding citizens abide by these rules, but then you let in a million migrants, and not just let them in, they are, like Tucker Carlson said, farming them out to other cities without telling local officials in those areas that they're coming. And Peter Ducey, in that press conference, he said that there have been 7,000 positive COVID cases just in this one border town alone from illegal aliens. In the last week, there have been 1,500. And they get on a plane, if it's a military plane, probably American Airlines, rename them communist airlines, they send them to Chattanooga, or they send them to Cleveland, or wherever it is. No vaccine, no papers, just a court date. Show up, and none of them do. Is that spreading the Delta variant? It's certainly undermining the rule of law. It's certainly causing more division in America. Try immigrating to the United States legally. Find a friend, talk to them about maybe if they had tried to get a spouse to come live with them in the United States. Talk about how difficult it is to do things legally. This is from the Wall Street Journal. This was yesterday. Some 100,000 green cards at risk of going to waste in COVID-19 backlog. You only have a specific amount of time that you can get these cards. And the federal government is slow in processing them because of COVID. It's all because of COVID. COVID, COVID, COVID. I remember this when I was in the UK. I needed to get some paperwork done. I kept calling the US Embassy in London. They wouldn't even take mail. I could send them the application through the mail, and you know how much the government loves those mail-in ballots. I couldn't do a mail-in application because of COVID. As if the COVID germs are all over that envelope, they wouldn't do it for you. Lots of people are caught in this backlog. They're talking about in this article, there are 1.2 million legal migrants trying to enter the United States legally that are at risk of being deported because of this backlog. The journal writes, Democrats in Congress are planning to make as many as 6 million immigrants who are in the country illegally eligible for green cards through their $3.5 trillion budget package. That's the big infrastructure package, because infrastructure has to do with illegal aliens and immigration, apparently. So if you came here illegally and you've been here for however long, Democrats really want you to get that green card. But if you went through the process of getting a visa, spent thousands of dollars to do it, you are backlogged. You might even be deported. You might have to leave. And then when you leave, if you want to come back, you have to get vaccinated on top of that. Everyone should just fly into Mexico and just come up from there. The journal, this is quoting from a lawyer on behalf of these migrants waiting for their green cards, says, the only thing we hear they're interested in doing is for the undocumented, not for the people who actually follow the laws. This is a lawless society we are living in right now. Totally lawless. It's exactly what Mr. Flurry and Mr. Armstrong have been writing and speaking about for nearly 100 years. All the way back to the 20s and 30s, Mr. Armstrong knew it. And talk about COVID. Wait until they see what they can do now with COVID, and then they're going to turn it over into climate. I call it COVID communism. You've got climate communism, just their variations, whatever crisis they need to use to justify the power grab. This is from the Epoch Times. Biden wants half of all vehicles sold in the United States by 2030 to be zero emission. That's in 8 years. No more gas. No more fuel. Electric cars. That is not what the market wants. That's not what the average American wants. This infrastructure bill, this is supposedly now bipartisan, 10 senators got together, they chipped away at it, they worked out an agreement, and they came to the bipartisan infrastructure bill that has nothing to do with infrastructure. It's 2,700 pages long, $3.5 trillion, and apparently 17 Republican senators are in favor of it. And that probably means it's going to pass. Wall Street Journal editorial board writes, this is the Green New Deal part one. They write, the bill is more consequential than the coverage, and one theme in particular deserves more attention. The bill is a major down payment on President Biden's Green New Deal. The Senate bill is a great leap forward for progressive ambitions to use central planning to re-engineer the electrical grid to banish carbon from the U.S. economy. The bill also starts the rollout of Mr. Biden's national electric vehicle charging network. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg gets $7.5 billion to plan this down to where to locate electric vehicle charging stations. They really love these electric vehicles. And the irony of this, I've been reading a book, it's called Green Illusions, is that it does not offset any carbon. The amount of work and mining that goes into creating electric cars, the electric cars, by the way, need electricity, and electricity needs to be produced by coal and nuclear plants, all of those things that they hate. You have to mine cobalt to make these batteries. That's done by slaves in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, in case you didn't know. The batteries, you can't dispose of them. They're an environmental hazard. And read some articles about what happens if these cars catch fire. They burn for eternity. There was one episode in Los Angeles where firefighters spent 4 days, it was something like 65,000 gallons of water, to just keep putting out this electric vehicle. They said they used the same amount of water in that 4 day period to put out that car that they would ordinarily use in a month. There are all these hazards with it. Think of all the carbon that was emitted from that car being on fire for all of that time. But they just have to push it. And it's not as if the big oil companies aren't profiting off of this either. Most of these green technologies are being developed by Shell and Exxon. They're not going anywhere, those big oil companies. They're just shifting the product line. They have to work with these big evil capitalists that they always talk about. The journal continues, the bill instructs Mr. Buttigieg to finance chargers that meet current or anticipated market demands and would be unlikely to be completed without federal assistance. The market doesn't want it, so the government plans it. Where have you heard? Central planning. This is communism. This is socialism. This is what we have been warning about, and you're seeing it happen. The journal says, these two imperatives conflict, but liberals believe that building more chargers in low-income areas will encourage more electric vehicle sales. That hasn't happened in California. I can't wait. I can't wait to drive out in the middle of rural Oklahoma and see an electric charging station for all those big Ford F-150s. Oh, there's a charging station. I might buy an electric vehicle now. I just need $65,000 to do it in that poor rural community. And by the way, I live about an hour away from where I need to do my grocery shopping. So by the time I'm able to drive there, I've got to charge my truck at the grocery store for 8 hours to get back. And my day is pretty much used up just to get to Dollar General. It's for the climate. The journal says the political genius of this bill is that it uses the label of infrastructure, which is popular, to disguise its much larger ambition of transforming the U.S. energy economy. With the help of Senate Republicans, the Green New Deal is underway. We all love infrastructure. I would like there to be more money spent on infrastructure around Oklahoma, like better roads and better ramps and bridges that aren't dilapidated. What we don't need it spent on is all of these things. United Airlines got $6 billion to develop flying electric taxis. I thought, is that not an airplane? A flying electric taxi? Who's going to regulate that in the cities? Toyota's working on a hydrogen-powered truck. That's been around for decades. Hydrogen power, it doesn't work. It's too expensive. It's not efficient. It's unreliable. It's difficult to manufacture. And on top of all of that, you know what Biden's really excited about? Amtrak's going to get a lot of money. We're going to develop those train lines again. We'll take. I saw someone tweeted, make the 19th century great again. Bring back all of those trains. It takes forever to get anywhere on the train. American cities are too far apart. You have to rent a car at the end of the line anyway, so you might as well fly. It's too expensive. And try doing that with families. You're better off driving or you're better off just flying. But they really push these things that there is no demand for. Also in that infrastructure bill, it would require all new cars to have alcohol monitoring devices. So in order to start your car, you'd have to exhale and a little monitor in there would tell you if you're fit to drive. How many things in a car break, especially in these newer ones? How long is that going to last? You're going to get in your car. Maybe you're at a friend's house. You just had one drink. It's not going to let you start your car. How long do you have to wait around for that? You think they're going to be doing that in Washington, D.C. after all those cocktail parties? You think any of those politicians are going to have the breathalyzer in their car? They're trying to kill all risk in the world, and you can't do that. There's always going to be risk. I say with all these COVID lockdowns, they're just extending the lives of people for a few more months. Most of the people that have died, they have comorbidities or they're older. They're on their deathbed, as the Illinois health director admitted. So would you rather live with all of these, the biomedical security state? Would you rather live 82 years in the medical slave state, or would you rather live 81 years as a free citizen? Life is not the most important thing. A lot of people have risked their lives for freedom. A lot of people have died for freedom. And now all we do is worship the duration of our life. Kimberly Strassel says the GOP's bad infrastructure deal. She says the bill similarly gives the feds unprecedented and centralized control over chunks of the economy. The Biden White House wants to remake America fundamentally in Bernie Sanders' vision. This is the moment the GOP needs to be hammering away at the bad policy, the risks, and the contrast in governance, which gets hard to do when Senate Republicans are whooping that Biden agenda along. They're not standing up to it. They're letting the socialists win. Well, you can have all of these crazy ideas and you can spend $2.7 trillion or $2.5 trillion on your crazy ideas. Just give us $900 billion for actual infrastructure. That's the compromise. Mr. Fleury wrote in August 2017, this was about the Paris Climate Accords. He says there's plenty of information out there to debunk the climate change conspiracy theory. He says climate change has become something like a religion for the radical left. They believe it as an article of faith regardless of the evidence. It is a tool they are using to increase their control. They are taking over. They want power. And you know what they're doing? They're making up a fake crisis to justify doing it. The flu, we need more socialism. We need lockdowns. Rain's a little bit harder than it used to. We need you to stop driving your cars. This is what the socialist takeover looks like. I know we say that a lot on this program. We've said it a lot over the decades. But you have to look at this country and wonder, what is the solution to this? If America goes down, I mean, I used to love being in England and Britain. I look over there and it's frightening. You look at Israel, you look at Australia and New Zealand. America has always been kind of the last hope for a lot of these people, a lot of the refugees. If it goes and turns into Venezuela, what do you have left? It's time to start asking those hard questions, and ultimately, your hope needs to be in God. Your hope needs to be in the Bible and that word. I thought I'd just mention, on the same line of this communist takeover, more of these, the January 6th terrorists are being arrested and hunted down. The guy, you might have seen him, he dressed up like George Washington. Just He was there to attend the rally. He walked into an open door in the Capitol, stood there for 15 minutes, walked out. He went home, and one of his friends tattled on him. The police monitored him for 8 months and finally arrested him for trespassing. Is that the world you want to live in, where your neighbors rat you out for trespassing? How many little laws are there that people could... I mean, it's turning into North Korea. Another couple, they're from Virginia. They have just been sentenced. And this really highlights how horrible this attack was. This couple, part of the insurrection, part of the terrorist attack on the Capitol, they went and trespassed in the building for 20 minutes, and then they left. But they had a couple of tweets that supported the election steal. They both pled guilty, and they were given 30 days in home confinement. 30 days for that. The biggest attack on America since the Civil War, as Joe Biden said. It was so bad, they had to do 30 days in house arrest. I'd encourage you to read our booklet, He Was Right. And there's an article in there titled, The Communist Infiltration of America Was Prophesied. Mr. Armstrong talks about how communism uses every diabolical means to weaken us from within, sapping our strength, perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, demoralizing our armed forces, and finally, after such infiltration, overthrowing our government by force and violence. All this cleverly disguised as a harmless political party. Communism is worldwide psychological warfare. He says communism is the devil's effort through his demon-inspired human tools to take from us this greatest national and economic blessing God ever conferred on any people. And when you look at the United States, you have to be thankful for those blessings. You have to think, where on else can you live like this? And it's not because anyone has earned it. God has bestowed those blessings on this nation, and Satan hates that because it proves God's existence. It proves Bible prophecy. That's why this country is under attack like no other country in the world. In this booklet, He Was Right, we continue. Even though the Soviet Union fell before its subversion, efforts could progress to the stage of destabilization and crisis. The effects of Satan-inspired psychological demoralization tactics are still very much alive in America today. They attack education. They get into positions of power in government, like we talked about at the start. They probably went to medical school. They attack religion. And America has ceased to be a virtuous nation. There's no one standing up to it. Dennis Prager, he wrote an article about just the comment section on some of these liberal news sites like the New York Times and the Washington Post. People have the wackiest ideas about what's causing problems in America and how to solve them. That article that they commented on, it was titled, What's Ripping American Families Apart? And people just have the craziest ideas. They have no solutions. Along with that He Was Right booklet, if you're looking for hope, if you're looking for the solution to these problems, read Mr. Fleury's article in the November-December 2020 Trumpet. A new government is coming. He writes, it's becoming clearer that becoming clearer than ever that leaders and governments of this world do not have real answers to the problems we face. In many countries, dissatisfaction and anger with the government are spreading faster than coronavirus. And he quotes a few scriptures that give hope. There's no hope in the governments of man. There's no hope that this world, that any institution will be able to solve these problems. We need a clean slate. We need the return of Jesus Christ to set up God's government, to set up perfect government. I've always loved this scripture in Daniel 2 and verse 44. Where it talks about all of these world-ruling kingdoms that try to solve the world's problems, but it says, that this stone comes down, and this kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. That government, that God's perfect government, will stand forever. Read those articles if you haven't. If you have any comments, you can email us, td@thetrumpet.com. Watch the live show at thetrumpet.com/live. Thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you next week.